Nick Ashew on the Fan. Final day of the PGA Championship. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do a lot of golf today. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials. Look, the Masters is the Masters, and then after that, you just kind of, you dabble in it, maybe just a little bit. Golf. People love golf, though. I get it. Had some fights last night. It was just quiet in sports a little bit, except for Aaron Rodgers, and now we got breaking NBA news, so I guess it's starting to pick up a little bit. We got a Game 7 in the NBA playoffs tonight. We got the Western Conference Finals starting tomorrow. We got Wizards Jazz trade rumors and psychotic rumors about LeBron to the Wizards, which, you know, we'll get to as well. I'm going to get a little coffee here for that one because that's psychotic to think. But it's okay. It's okay. So, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, no surprise, wins MVP. It was announced like 2 minutes ago. 14th player in league history won back-to-back awards. That right now is a guy that you look at as potential face of the NBA with Victor Wembanyama, and we're going to have the Western Conference Finals starting tomorrow with the two teams in the Thunder and the Spurs that are going to be just punching each other in the face for the next few years. That's the way the NBA is going right now. There are no other teams that can compete with the Thunder and Spurs, and what those teams have built just continues to be. Again, you got to have luck. You got to have some pieces fall in place. But the Spurs and Thunder continue to be the two franchises, the two teams that I look at and go, oh man, Wizards, if you could just get to that point, if you could just keep this thing going, don't get tempted by star chasing, don't get tempted by, you know, trying to make it work with Anthony Davis, if you can get value, and don't get tempted to hold on to that number one pick if the Jazz actually come calling and Danny Ainge is crazy enough to say, hey, how about we give you Ace Bailey and the number two overall pick and maybe a future pick as well if you let us trade up one spot. You do it. It's difficult, right? Because when you're rebuilding a team, anything, right? You look at the Nationals right now, it feels like it's been a perpetual rebuild forever, right? You're kind of rebuilding off of the initial rebuild after the World Series, and time's just flown by. The Commanders, you get that 12-win season, then a 5-win season, and you're like, well, wait, oh, we're actually rebuilding now. They had to kind of figure out what their identity was. A lot of moving parts, new front office, new ownership group, everything. The Wizards have kind of been the one team in this city. Then if you look, it's just been a steady climb, finally, with this era, with this group. Obviously, in the past, there's been a lot of play for the 8-seed, play for the play-in tournament. Now, they broke it down and finally said, no, we're doing this the right way, and that's the ties to that Oklahoma City front office and the mindset, and that's why you don't really know what they're going to do. There's no guarantee A.J. Tabonce is the number one overall pick. There's no guarantee they're just going to go straight Darren Peterson. I mean, you got to keep everybody guessing and try to pile up as many assets as you can. So in a couple of years, and I know, a couple of years, right? But in a couple of years, it could be talking about the Wizards as a true contender out of the Eastern Conference. And maybe it's sooner. I mean, listen, you can make these jumps. We've talked about it, right? The Thunder go from like 24 to 40 wins to 57 to 68 and win a championship. The Spurs won 22 games, Victor Wembanyama's rookie year, and then you're climbing and all of a sudden they win 62 and they're in the Western Conference Finals against the now two-time MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder. It's not always pretty. It's not always fun. It's not always something that you as a fan want to be a part of. But the one thing I've always noticed, and I don't think like basketball fans get enough credit for this in D.C. Look, D.C. is a hoops town too, and I say this all the time because I think people overlook it. It's not, yes, Commanders, football, Redskins, all that. Like, it's always going to be at the top. It's always going to move the needle. It's always there. And listen, that's football in this country. We know that. We've seen the numbers. We get all of that. But D.C. is a hoops town. And the one thing I've learned over the years, talking plenty of NBA and Wizards, and it could be just NBA, right? Because we got a lot of people from a lot of different places still in the city. But, like, you care about the NBA and you care about basketball. And we have good basketball in D.C. When we have winning basketball, even if the ceiling feels like the second round. Go back to John Wall, Bradley Beal, those couple of years, right? They're losing in the second round, but before the John Wall injuries really set in and he missed all that time before he got traded and everything. And you look and go, and they got something special. There's something growing there. And you could go back to the previous time with Gilbert Arenas and Antoine Jameson and Caron Butler and that big three. Even Larry Hughes, if you really want to go down that road. There was always this feel of like, okay, this team is worth watching. There's something there. It's exciting. It's fun. And people rally around that. And look, I get it. As a Wizards fan, you've been kind of jaded for a long time. You've been frustrated. But there is there is proof with what we're going to see tomorrow in the Western Conference Finals. I'd argue to a smaller degree what you're going to see in terms of what the Pistons have built, Eastern, you know, second round of the playoffs, Game 7 again tonight. But they built a lot through the draft as well. It's not at the same totally. Tobias Harris, the free agent, you know, it's not apples to apples. But you're seeing a lot of these blueprints come together, and it shows that what the Wizards are doing is the same thing. They're following that plan. They're following that blueprint. And that's what should give you at least a feeling of hope. Like, there's no guarantees. Guys could get hurt. Things don't work out. Draft picks don't pan out. Again, a lot of this is luck, too. You think the Spurs weren't lucky drafting Victor Wembanyama because they fell number one overall? Like, they were tanking that season. You think that the Thunder haven't gotten lucky with some of these draft picks that they have panning out? You think the Thunder really thought that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, when they traded for him from the Clippers, was going to be a back-to-back MVP like he was just named a few minutes ago? Again, it's literally been like 10 minutes. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was named the NBA MVP again, if you missed that. And it's, some of it is this, things just work out better than what you anticipated. But if the Wizards can keep this pace going and keep this momentum, they got something. They got something that'll work. And then you'll be where the Spurs and Thunder are now, playing a game one of the Western Conference Finals tomorrow. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just named the MVP a few minutes ago. We do have an Aaron Rodgers answer now. That's good, if you cared about the Steelers. And listen, I'm surprised we got an answer now that Aaron Rodgers signed a one-year deal yesterday with the Steelers, right? So it's up to $25 million. It's kind of what you'd expect, right around this range. And, you know, I think they only paid him, what, it was a little over $13 million last year. He got a little playoff bonus. He's going to be 43 years old. Here's the one thing I'll say. It is a lucky, lucky feeling to have, a comforting feeling, a calming feeling, if you will, to watch this offseason and stand on the sidelines with the Commanders not having to get involved in anything quarterback-related whatsoever. Now, I know we saw Jaden Daniels get hurt a lot last year. There's concerns about the health and durability and all that, and that's fair and that's fine, and you should have those concerns. I have them too, and I'm sure the team does. But to watch the moving parts that we've had this offseason, where the Steelers knew they had no other options except for drafting Drew Aller, and they just sat and waited for Aaron Rodgers to finally say, yeah, sure, I'll play again. Yeah, sure, I'll be a part of this again. Yeah, I'll give it another go. I mean, you would have had Kyler Murray or Tua if you were the Commanders looking for quarterback options short term. You weren't going to get anybody in the draft. Fernando Mendoza and nobody else at that point, and hopefully not Ty Simpson. There were barely any bridge quarterbacks. Maybe you could have kept Taylor Heineke from retiring. I mean, it was a bad offseason if you needed a quarterback. A bad offseason. It's part of the reason why the Steelers waited until Aaron Rodgers decided, you know, last night to sign with the Steelers and stay there. And look, if you're Pittsburgh, this makes sense. This works for now. You need a quarterback. You're a team that's got a lot of questions, and Mike Tomlin's gone, and you'll take any stability that you can. And look, for everybody that thinks Aaron Rodgers needs to retire, sure, I mean, he's going to be 43. His body's not going to be what it was, but like, he takes care of himself. He's still got something left in the tank. He had a solid season last year. I mean, he completed almost 66% of his passes, which, by the way, was his best since 2021. 3,300 yards passing, it's nothing special, but 24 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I mean, there's a lot of teams around the NFL that would kill for their quarterback to put up those kind of numbers, okay? It's like comparing comparing LeBron James to, like, prime LeBron and looking at him at 41 going, hey, he's old and broken out. Yeah, he's 41 years old. He's putting up numbers at 41 that most players in the NBA would kill to have. They would beg to have those kind of numbers. There's a lot of quarterbacks around the NFL that would look at what Aaron Rodgers did last year, who, by the way, Aaron Rodgers' receivers averaged 6.5 yards after the catch per completion. That is the highest number of Aaron Rodgers' entire career. So for all of this, like, oh God, Aaron Rodgers, they're screwed. Aaron Rodgers is a massive upgrade from anything else the Steelers could have at quarterback, even if it's for 1 year, which it should be. And it was not a bad season for Aaron Rodgers. Again, his completion percentage was the highest in the last 5 years. It's a big deal. 24-7 touchdown-interception ratio, pretty damn good. I mean, I get it. Aaron Rodgers is not part of your long-term future, but nobody's saying that. Sometimes when you're a team that kind of hitches your wagon to this horse, you're stuck with it for a while. And the Steelers have been kicking the quarterback can down the road for a long, long time. I mean, they have. Ever since Ben Roethlisberger and the bottom fell out in his career, and you watched going, well, this guy can't play anymore. It wasn't even the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger. It was the ghost of the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger. It was so bad at the end, and the Steelers had no backup plan. They thought Kenny Pickett might be the guy because you watched him closely when he played at Pitt, and you're like, oh, wait, this guy can't play. He's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. Solid backup. That's all you're getting out of it. The Steelers have not been able to find an answer at quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger's last season. Still playing in the NFL. I mean, it's not easy, right? It's not easy. We know this, right? We know this in D.C. It ain't easy to find ourselves a quarterback. It is a rough go out there. But at some point, they're going to have to figure this out. And the AFC is loaded, right? I've been saying this for a while. There's like potentially 10 teams that you could look at as playoff teams next year without even maybe one surprise. Like everybody's jumping on the Raiders now, right? I don't know if I'm going to go that far. But they did improve this offseason. Are the Raiders a team that maybe wins 7 games next year, and then a year from now, they're in the conversation? The AFC is loaded. The AFC is loaded with great defenses, young, talented quarterbacks, and teams competing to keep the Chiefs away from being the number one seed in the AFC, because that's the thing, too. It's not even the teams that made the playoffs last year. It's, okay, well, what are we talking about in terms of the Ravens with a new head coach, right? Are they going to be back in the playoffs? Does Buffalo continue the pace that they're on, where you've at least got Josh Allen carrying the team, but that gets them back into the postseason? Is Joe Burrow healthy, which means that's a playoff team in Cincinnati? And Cincinnati didn't make the playoffs last year. Baltimore didn't make the playoffs last year. Kansas City didn't make the playoffs last year. You'd expect them to be in the conversation, certainly again, with a healthy Patrick Mahomes, even if they didn't really do that much this offseason and were already on the outside looking into the playoffs before Patrick Mahomes hurt his knee. So either way, the AFC is loaded. And yeah, if you're the Steelers, this was the move to go with right now, even if Mike McCarthy's going to be the guy following the guy in Mike Tomlin, and it may be a short-term fix there. But I just look at where the Steelers are, and you know what that feels like, right? You know what it's like to see a team that's just like, throw your hands up. We don't know. Maybe next year in the draft, that's the guy. We're going to draft our future at quarterback next year. There's potential for next year's NFL draft to be loaded, maybe 5-6 quarterbacks taken in the first round, but there's no guarantees. Because you got to think of what this draft we just had was supposed to look like at quarterback before it completely changed. We had 2 quarterbacks taken in the first round. One was a complete shock. One, you kind of knew, once he won a national championship, probably going to be the number one overall pick in Fernando Mendoza, and that's really it. And there were supposed to be like 4 quarterbacks that were looked at as potential first-round picks. So there's no guarantees that even next year that's the case, which is why it's so important for the Commanders to nurture Jaden Daniels' career in every way possible. And I'll listen. For what they've done over the first 2 years so far, they have. You go out and you get a left tackle in Laremy Tunsil. You have to solidify the offensive line, specifically left tackle, specifically that blind side of your quarterback on the outside, and that is exactly what they did. Laremy Tunsil worked out. You've got to add some receivers, and there's still some questions about what the receiving room is going to look like once the regular season starts. We got a while for that. There's some names out there we know in Stephon Diggs and Brandon Ayuk, and maybe you bring Debo back. I got a theory on that, too, that we'll get to. But you know, if you're then focused on the defense, they went out and addressed the things they need on defense, and no guarantees. But you have more talent and more depth on defense that you'd hope, in theory, these moves pan out so you have a defense that can actually get some stops for a change. So Jaden Daniels and the offense aren't playing from behind the entire time this season, down 14 points after the first quarter, whatever. So this team has certainly done what they need to do so far. Now it's a question of whether or not David Blough and that offense works and Jaden Daniels under center matters more, because it's got to work. It has to work. Jaden Daniels cannot be anything less than a franchise quarterback for this team, period. Period. They have no more room for error, because if it doesn't work, everybody's gone. Like, everybody's gone. That's what that means in the NFL. When you draft a quarterback and they don't work out in the first round, everybody loses their jobs. That's the pressure that's on Dan Quinn and even Adam Peters this year. And I get it. It's a rebuild. And I have been patient and cautious about this rebuild because I know what a real rebuild looks like. I've seen it. I've been begging for this team and for the Wizards too and any other team. Doing it the right way. But you have to show the progress and you have to show the growth as time goes on. And that's the key for this Commanders team now is to make sure that you, for a very, very long time, until Jaden Daniels retires 15 years from now, is that you are not in the quarterback market and you're desperate the way that the Steelers were, to the point where they would sit there and go, hey, Aaron, you want to come over here and sign this contract? No, hey, pay attention, Aaron, we need you to sign this contract. We've got to get this done. No, hey, put the ayahuasca down, Aaron. No, come back, come on, come sign this. I mean, that's what it was. They're just sitting and waiting. Fine, we're going to put a really weird tag on you so we get compensation if you go to Arizona. No, come on, Aaron, get over. It's like they were like bringing their child in the store over from another aisle. Just come on, get away from the candy. Aaron, no, we're not getting any candy today. Focus on this. Need you to learn. We got to learn some patience, okay? I mean, just you got to be exhausted if you're dealing with something like that. With Aaron Rodgers, unpredictable as hell. We all know that. But they at least have it for a year. It's just good. It's a breath of fresh air to just sit and at least know quarterback at least now is settled, but now you got to prove it if you're the Commanders. You have to now show that the pieces you've put together will work. And this is a massive year for this team. Again, I'm not saying 12 wins again, but you got to get at least like 9-10. Really, 9 or 10. Healthy, 9 or 10 wins. That's getting this team back where they need to be moving forward. And then you keep adding to it. You're going to keep adding the pieces. It's the pieces have to work. You add to it. And draft well, too. The draft is kind of a big thing. Guess what? Jaden Daniels' contract is going to get expensive. And that's going to come sooner than you think. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We're less than a week past the point where we found out the Wizards were going to get the number one overall pick. Still a little bit of a celebration. Still a little bit of a high, you know. All that young, up-and-coming talent and building around it and saying, well, if you could just get that number one pick in the 2026 NBA draft. And here we are. Chase Hughes, Monumental Sports, jumps on with me now. Nick Ashew on the Team 980. I guess now, I know you've already been out there. You've watched workouts, Chase. You've seen a lot. But has it kind of set in at this point, like all the leading up to, all of the hype, all of the praying that the basketball gods would let the ping pong balls fall in the Wizards' favor? Has it settled in at least at this point, like, oh, we're talking about the number one pick for this team in a really loaded draft?
I'm almost all the way there. I still kind of remind myself, wow, the Wizards won the first overall pick. And, you know, not just getting the first pick, but in this draft, it seems just so fortuitous, so lucky for them, especially at this point in their rebuild, the way it could vault them forward. And now we just got to wait and see for a consensus to form on who will be the number one pick, because right now I think it's really up in the air.
And it does definitely feel up in the air. And, you know, listen, if you look at roster construction alone, it kind of feels like A.J. DeBonsa fits more with the Wizards. Darren Peterson fits a little bit more with the Jazz at the number two pick. I know there's workouts still in interviews. There's so much more to go with at this point. But, you know, just from you and just seeing these two players, seeing the roster, seeing where they fit, do you have a gut? Do you have just sort of a maybe if you were drafting the direction you would go? I know there's a lot of moving parts, but there is so much hype around these two guys that I kind of feel like either way you go is like both these guys deserve to be a number one overall pick.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's really close. I honestly think it's 50-50 at this point. At first, I thought it was DeBonsa. Obviously, he killed it at the combine, put up unbelievable measurement numbers. But the more I talk to people there, there were a lot of people who say that they think that the Wizards also like Peterson. So I think they're going to take their time to make this decision. You know, I would still give DeBonsa probably a slight edge. I mean, he's the number one pick on most mock drafts. And then you see what he did at the combine. And I always tell people through experience, like, don't make too much of vertical leap. Like, look at all the best players in the NBA nowadays. With the exception of Anthony Edwards, they don't play above the rim. They don't jump super high. Like, it's not the 80s or the 90s anymore. But when a guy is basically 6'9 without shoes and has a 42-inch vertical leap, I'm starting to think, like, how many players after LeBron and Wemby would you list as better, just like freak athletes that have gone into the draft this century? Like, I think he's in that conversation. So it's hard to imagine a team could pass on A.J. DeBonsa, but this is the year where he might not even go number one.
Which is just, yeah, I mean, it just shows the level of talent that's here. All right, so obviously that's one advantage that DeBonsa has, just the sheer athleticism alone. When you look at Darren Peterson, what's something that really stands out to you where you say, like, that would be massive for the Wizards?
his ability to be an offensive engine. I think DeBonta can do a lot off the dribble. I think his dribble package for his size is incredible. But I think Peterson profiles as a guy that you could run your offensive round as a lead guard. I don't think it's going to happen early on. He says he's more comfortable playing point guard, that he's always played point guard, that it wasn't until he got to Kansas where Bill Self put his hand on his shoulder and said, look, buddy, you're going to play the two to help us to win. But his ability to get past people off the dribble, shoot off the dribble from three, I think that does project long-term as a guy that you could run your offense through. Like, you know, maybe if the Wizards drafted him, it's Trae Young for a couple years. And then, you know, Darren Peterson is the heir apparent. He's just going to have to develop the point guard skills to play at the NBA level, you know, protecting the ball. He's got to improve his passing vision. His passing numbers were not great at Kansas last year. So I think that would be his biggest selling point. And related to that, just the first step, the way he can get past people so easily to break down the defense and the shooting threes off the dribble, those things are really enticing when you think of what plays in the NBA nowadays.
When you look at teams, you know, and specifically the Wizards, but, you know, the Jazz are in the spot too, and I kind of look at them with the top two picks since we're talking so much to DeBonta and Peterson here. Like, would you focus more on best player and talent, or would it be roster construction and best fit? You know what I mean? Because, like, DeBonta kind of fits a little bit more with what the Wizards have, but then there's the certain upsides that Darren Peterson has as well. Which direction would you lean if you had to weigh one of those?
Best player available, 1,000 times out of 1,000. Yeah. I think you have to play that game when you're picking this high in the draft. For Exhibit A, I'll point to Dylan Harper with the San Antonio Spurs right now. Bill Simmons and all the national media, they're talking about, oh, this guy could be a superstar. He could be first-team All-NBA. Okay, well, what if the Spurs were like, you know what? We like him, but we already have De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle. They wouldn't look very smart right now, although there were a few decent backup plans in that particular class. But I could go on, I could give you hours of examples of it going both ways. You know, Vlade Divac just recently said that one of the reasons why they passed on Luka Doncic was because they already had a point guard in 2018. They already had De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox is an All-NBA point guard. That was a franchise-changing, catastrophic mistake. The other end of it, the Golden State Warriors, when they drafted Steph Curry, they didn't need a scoring guard. Monte Ellis, I'm sure you remember him. You're a ball knower.
Oh, yeah.
He was a really good guard, about the same size as Steph Curry. They also had Jamal Crawford. I've looked this up recently, and they overlooked that and said, you know what, why don't we take a chance on the guy from Davidson who can make threes at a really high rate? And the result was a dynasty. So I'm not exaggerating. A lot of the biggest mistakes that have ever been made in NBA draft history, the most famous one is Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan when the Blazers thought they needed a center. It usually comes down to a team being too deferential to position over best player available.
God, I forgot Jamal Crawford was on that Warriors team, too. You're right. And I'm with you, by the way, Chase. I think best player available, especially when you're just trying to kind of build the core and figure out who's going to be there long term and who, you know, where their positions fit. I absolutely think that that's the right choice. Talking to Chase Hughes here, after one and two, DeBonta Peterson, it feels like the consensus is Cameron Boozer is going to be three, barring something crazy or a trade, going to the Grizzlies at three. Cameron Boozer's got a really high floor, high basketball IQ. I mean, he's a 20-10 guy, great passer for a big as well. I think he's got a really high ceiling in the NBA, but, you know, a lot of the conversation becomes like, well, you know, he's not as athletic. I mean, there's some of the best players in the NBA, like you kind of pointed out earlier, Chase, not that athletic. I mean, Nikola Jokic is 7 foot with a dad bod, and he's running up and down the court like it's nothing. So it's like, I don't know, to me, I feel like that's such an overrated knock against Cameron Boozer. Where are you on that?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I go back and forth on him like I think everyone does. You know, the combine results were interesting, a little shorter than I expected, but a big wingspan. And I believe he had the best shuttle run of all the top prospects. So we were, you know, anyone who's watched him, I think a lot of people have pointed out, I don't know about the lateral quickness. Well, I mean, he proved at the combine in that drill that he can move pretty well laterally. You know, I think if he's to become a star at the next level, the shooting will have to translate. He was a really good shooter in college. I mean, among the top prospects in this draft, he is the most efficient player, right? I mean, he shot well over 50% from the field, 39% from three on 4 attempts per game. That's really good for a big man. And what impresses me is that he's 253 pounds, and he plays bully ball, but he's got just such soft touch around the rim. And I think that bodes really well, because what I was saying is, about guys not really having to have great vertical leaps and playing above the rim, you still have to score around the rim. It's very helpful if you can make threes. That's really important. And then you got to be able to get into the paint and score around the rim. And I think he's going to be able to do that without having to jump over people, because he'll just, bump into them and then find an angle and with a nice touch shot or a floater or a hook shot, get it in. So I think he's got a higher ceiling than people give him credit for. It's really just a product of this draft where you're talking about him going third or fourth, because I think most other years he'd be talking first or second.
Now, in terms of fourth, the Chicago Bulls, does it feel like Caleb Wilson at this point? Could you see a surprise there at all? Again, all of this is pretending we're not talking about trades at this point either, which could really throw things out of whack.
I honestly think it's very possible that Wilson goes three. The Grizzlies, okay. I think a lot of people have made this point. They love athleticism and defense, and he's the best player of the top four if that's what you like. And if that was the case, then Boozer would fall to four where his father played. His father, of course, was Carlos Boozer, two-time All-Star, played for the Bulls. So that would be kind of cool. But I definitely would not discount some of the other guards. And, I could list a bunch of them because there's really little separating them. But to pick one, I would say Darius Acuff. I think he could definitely go top five because, once Peterson's shooting numbers dropped off in the second half of the season, Acuff just really surged to the end of the year and has a case as the best shooter in the draft. I mean, I think he shot like 44% from three, did it off the catch, off the dribble with a lot of focus from the defense. And, John Calipari doesn't bat 1,000 in the draft, but he's put a lot of star guards into the NBA. And Acuff next. You kind of got to retrain your brain and remember that Calipari doesn't coach in Kentucky anymore. It's at Arkansas. So if he recruits a guy and he's a guard and he's got skills like this, more often than not, that player turns into a really, really good NBA guard.
Is there anybody that you look at in this draft that you feel like could start to jump up draft boards and start to get a little more hype as we get closer?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you two names. One that, would be perhaps a big rise, that's Tunde Yusufu of Baylor. He's like fringe first and second round, but I don't buy it. I think he's going to go around the top 20. We'll see how many of these guys stay in the draft, by the way. There's a lot of uncertainty in that range. But he was a McDonald's All-American, one of the best athletes in the draft. People were comparing him to Anthony Edwards after the McDonald's All-American game because he was one of the more exciting players on the court. Really good defender, and there's questions about his offense, but he scored at Baylor. So I think there's a really high ceiling there, and he's got a great motor. And then another guy I would say is Kingston Flemings of Houston. Mm-hmm. He's a lock in the top 10, but I could see him moving up a few spots from where he's currently projected, which I think is the back end of the top 10, because he had a great combine. He shot the ball really well. He measured out a little bit taller than I thought he would at about 6'3 without shoes, 6'2.5 without shoes. And his first step was confirmed at the combine as being pretty special. Like, he is extremely fast. He plays defense very strong, kind of like a Cason Wallace. He said he models his defensive game after him. And you could just tell talking to him that he's going to interview well. He's very enthusiastic, very well-spoken, very humble. And so I've been enjoying watching him all year. I love physical defensive guards who can shoot and who have passing feel, and he checks off all those boxes.
What do you think the chances are we see a star moved before or during the draft, like a Giannis, for example?
I think the chances are pretty good, at least with Giannis. It sounds like there's momentum there, right? We saw the report from ESPN. I really am just fascinated at how this offseason is going to go once the lottery odds are enacted, assuming they are. We've all seen the proposal. We've all weighed in on what we think about it. But what we don't know and what I personally foresee is a ton of domino effects in terms of trade value and also how teams operate this offseason. If you have no incentive to strip your team down to the studs to rebuild anymore, then that's going to change how teams go about the offseason and the types of players that they're interested in. Then first-round picks could take on a completely different level of value now that it's all you need to essentially do is be in the 16-team lottery and you have a lottery ticket that could cash in with the number one overall pick. So how is that going to affect everything? It's going to be fascinating to watch. I think it's going to be a lot more profound in terms of what it changes than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, we could have a wild NBA offseason. Chase Hughes, good to talk to you again, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, man. Let's do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you know how the NBA goes, right? It's kind of cyclical, and I feel like it's been way too quiet for way too long. And I feel like this offseason just has this, again, it's harder in free agency to build a team now. We know that the draft lottery is going to certainly be different moving forward. But, man, you got some stars' names getting thrown around now. And, you know, we'll see what happens in some of these playoff series, too. Are there more changes there? I mean, there's a lot to certainly work with here that could cause a lot of movement around the draft, especially if a team decides, you know, I'd rather get another first-round pick here and go younger. I mean, we've seen it before. You saw it in the NFL. You watched the Giants just do that. I mean, who knows if you'll see a team go that direction, too. The Bucks could be in that spot. You got the 10th pick, and then you go another direction and get another earlier pick, and you move Giannis. So, all right, we'll see. We just had the NFL draft, and it's like now we get into the most hyped NBA draft for the next, you know, month plus or whatever that we get to lead up to that. I'm Nick Ashew. Nick Ashew on the Fan. There's a lot of Wizards rumors out there right now, some more believable than others. It's crazy, though. Like, the Wizards are one of the, besides, obviously, you know, Game 7 Pistons, Cavs tonight, Western Conference Finals start tomorrow, and, of course, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, if you missed it at the top of the show, named about 45 minutes ago, MVP again, which, like, everybody knew SGA was going to win back-to-back MVPs, and the Thunder are going to win their second title. They're going to beat the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, though that could go full seven games. It could be a great, great series out west. But the Wizards are, listen, they're a big part of the conversation now because they got the number one overall pick. They got leverage. They got control. They got interest from just around the league with what they've built, and that's a testament to the suffering that everybody's had to go through to build this thing up, but that's how real rebuilds are built. And if you look at what the potential could be for this team, there's two rumors out there. One, I swear, has got to just be the internet being stupid, but we'll have fun with it. And sometimes that's what it's good for, right? The other actually makes sense, even if it's maybe a little exaggerated. So the thing that stands out to me that's clearly just BS, but fun, and we can play the game because this is what happens this time of year, is LeBron James playing for the Wizards. It's not going to happen. But what I do love is the semi-trolling that's out there from people that play the narrative of, well, you know, Jordan couldn't do it in D.C. LeBron would cement his legacy if, well, he wins a title with the Wizards. Okay. Look, we know that's not going to happen. I mean, really, at this point, no team in the East is going to win a title with the way they're constructed as long as the Spurs and Thunder are where they are. I mean, they're going to sit there, beat each other up in the Western Conference Finals for years, and the East is just going to have the right to play whatever team wins that series and then lose to them in the finals. That's how it looks right now until we see a big change to anybody in the Eastern Conference. That includes the Knicks, who have looked really good in these playoffs and really dominant, and who play whoever wins tonight between the Cavs and Pistons. But that, we know, is over the top. But it does make you think. A lot of us, you probably remember seeing Jordan in a Wizards uniform. Maybe you watched him play. I remember as a kid going to watch him play. So, you know, it was good. It was fine. But LeBron, at his peak, and what we saw at 41 this past year, it's a higher level of play than Michael Jordan at 41. I mean, it just was.
Jordan's final season, he was 40.
Right.
But the thing that's interesting is, I believe he was the first player age 40 to play all 82 games in an NBA regular season.
Right.
I don't see LeBron doing.
But he wasn't playing at, like, LeBron's athleticism and physical upside is still higher than where Jordan was at 40, but Jordan did play.
I agree, but
more consistent.
I just think the stamina side there, the modern NBA just does not have that stamina anyway.
It's a different game, too. I mean, there's just more possessions. The game is faster. It's just there's more wear and tear on a player's body with the way that the NBA is played today versus the way that it was played in the 90s and, you know, early 2000s then. It's just different in terms of total possessions a game, things along those lines. It's all viewed differently, which is why I also just hate the whole comparison. You know, you look 90s NBA versus today, so different in every way. The way teams were built, the way the rules were, the strategy, everything. It's just totally different. But we can play the game, and it's fine. I'll play the game. But what I will say is, LeBron on the Wizards is a funny thought. And if you look at the way the roster is constructed for 1 year, and it was just he came over in free agency, I'd be like, okay, this could be fun. But it makes no sense. So I'm just going to squash that now and say, let's have that imaginary alternate reality, but it's not actually going to happen. Now, the other side of things, though, the Wizards and Jazz potentially trading, the Jazz going up from 2-1, giving the Wizards Ace Bailey and then even a future first-round pick. This has floated around the internet how much in terms of that specific framework for a trade is true. There's a lot to be asked there. But in terms of the actual conversation and the interest in A.J. Abanza from the Jazz, that's real. And he does want to, at least reportedly, stay in Utah. Went to BYU. But if you're the Wizards, you hold all the cards here. Not the LeBron cards and any of that, but the real cards where you have a chance to draft a player at either one or two that's worthy of being a number one overall pick. Both of them. A.J. Abanza, Darren Peterson are both number one overall pick worthy in terms of talent, in terms of upside. What comes after that is roster fit, which you shouldn't care about at this point. Upside, which you should absolutely care about. Work ethic, the personality traits, all of those other little details that separate one player from the other in any draft that teams will go through to try and mitigate as much risk as they possibly can. But for the Wizards, if they end up drafting Darren Peterson or A.J. Abanza, either one is a win. Which is why if the Jazz actually come calling and offer the number two pick and Ace Bailey, and with or without another first round pick, and the Wizards go down a spot and draft Darren Peterson and at least get Ace Bailey in the process, you do that trade in a second. In a second, because here's the thing. Darren Peterson has more upside than A.J. Abanza. There is a chance that Darren Peterson has a better career than A.J. Abanza. Now, is he not as physically built yet for the NBA? Fine, but neither was Kevin Durant. Okay? And he's done fine. A.J. Abanza is an athletic freak, but Darren Peterson has a tremendous amount of athleticism, too. Peterson's the better shooter and the better defender. Though some of it's effort, and I would argue that A.J. Abanza has the potential to be a very good defender in the NBA, it's just based on effort. And a lot of times he's double-teamed at BYU, shots are harder, so he's only shooting 33% from three, and then on the defensive side, he's like, I got to scale back because I got to carry this team offensively. So there's a lot of other things in there than just like, let's compare three-point percentage between Darren Peterson and A.J. Abanza. It's not that simple. But you do have the questions about the cramping and could that affect him, you know, Darren Peterson into this season. Is it a thing, right? Well, that's how a medical team clears that. And you can usually have a level of comfort that's there. But the upside for Darren Peterson is, I mean, he's compared to Kobe Bryant, which is dangerous, which is hard on players when they don't actually ask for those comparisons. But the reality is that's what's placed on him. If you get Ace Bailey on top of that, who was, I mean, as hyped as anybody in last year's draft with Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey. Like, that was the three. But Ace Bailey dropped, was really trying to force his way to Washington. He wanted to be a Wizard. So you'd have a guy that wants to be in Washington, that wants to be a part of this team, that's also only played a year in the NBA. Not even, I don't think even 21 yet. Might be 21. Maybe. Doesn't matter. You still get two young guys that have all-star potential upside, maybe even MVP caliber upside, if all the things fall into place, for trading down a spot. The problem is, Danny Ainge is the dude that traded down from 1 to 3 with the Sixers so he could draft Jason Tatum, and the Sixers drafted Markelle Fultz because he knew he could get value by trading down and getting the better player. Danny Ainge is smart. It's why I just don't think that that's the trade that actually happens, and it's much more of a rumor that's around on the internet. But if it were to be true, and Danny Ainge were to offer that, and you're the Wizards, you do that in a second. Without question, you do that. All right, we look ahead to Game 7 tonight in the NBA playoffs next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander named your NBA MVP. In 8 seasons, he's already won 2 NBA MVPs. Probably going to win another title. Thunder Spurs start the Western Conference Finals tomorrow. We got Game 7 of the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, Cavs and Pistons tonight at 8. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Yeah, Detroit's the favorite in this game. I think Detroit wins this game. The one thing that's going to hurt whoever comes out of this series is both the Cavs and the Pistons have already gone through grueling first-round series. Both have gone 7 games. Pistons had to come back from 3-1. And now if this is another close, grinded-out game, and then you're going on to face a rested Knicks team in the Eastern Conference Finals that swept the Sixers, that's not an easy task. Now, you know, Detroit had a lot of success against the Knicks in the regular season. The Cavs are in a different spot than the Pistons, though, because if you're the Cavs tonight, you got pressure, man. You got to win now. The Pistons lose, like, yes, the expectations are there as the one seed in the East. But at the same time, this is a team that's just made those massive jumps, right? It was just last year they tripled their win total. 2 years ago, the Pistons won 14 games. Last year, they hired J.B. Bickerstaff, tripled the win total. This year, 60 wins, first in the Eastern Conference. You're making that climb. a loss in the second round is not going to be something they want, but it's also something that still is the progression of a team that's gotten better, right? To talk about the Thunder when they won 57 and lost in the second round before they won their title a couple of seasons ago. The Spurs are at that big jump year where you don't have the playoff experience. That's essentially the Pistons still right now. The Cavs, on the other hand, they've had this thing going on for years. And they've been trying to win games, and they've been trying to win playoff series, and they've been trying to get out of the second round, and they're so desperate that they traded for James Harden, hoping maybe he'd be good in the playoffs this time. It's like the Steelers were so desperate, they just waited and waited for Aaron Rodgers, and then he finally said, all right, I'll come over and sign those papers now. And look, you've had some good games in this series after a horrible start from James Harden. You had, what, Game 5 where he put up 30, Game 4 had three straight buckets late to help him win. You know, that's how they got back in the series, and you know, game 6, though, Harden was what? 6 of 13. He was all right. 23 points, but 8 turnovers. I mean, he was up and down. It wasn't a great performance, but it wasn't a horrible performance. Donovan Mitchell was kind of quiet, though, too. And Donovan Mitchell's had his own knocks as a, you know, guy that's supposed to carry a team past the second round of the playoffs, because the Cavs have one of the most expensive rosters in the NBA. And they've committed a lot of money to a lot of guys, including two bigs that have been in trade rumors for a while. If the Cavs don't win this game tonight and they lose in the second round of the playoffs again, there are going to be changes. There are certain teams in the NBA right now that just have hit that point where you can expect to see changes this offseason. It's why with this loaded draft and the depth of talent that's in this draft, on top of stars maybe wanting to be moved to this offseason or teams deciding they want to change some things up, I think we're going to have an NBA offseason that has a lot of movement and has a lot of potential trades, maybe one or two, like three-team trades. I mean, it's possible. The Cavs could be a team breaking this roster up, trading some guys away. The Timberwolves could be another team who now regressed after making two Western Conference finals. They're going to maybe make some trades, especially now with, you know, Anthony Edwards kind of talking about how they're not really a championship team after they lost, and he's going and dapping up the Spurs with 5 minutes to go still in the game, knowing that thing was in, you know, done. Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets lost in the first round. Nikola Jokic has basically said the same thing as Anthony Edwards, like they're not able to compete there. Do the Nuggets try and make some moves this offseason? That's going to change that. The Orlando Magic, I'm telling you now, they're going to be in on Giannis this offseason. The Magic are another team that's in that conversation. The Celtics, another team. You blow a 3-1 lead, lose in the first round, they're going to be aggressive this offseason. There's a lot of changes that could I mean, that's only some of the teams. It's not even all of them, right? There's a lot of teams that could be making a lot of moves this offseason that could shake up the NBA, which is also why I say if you're the Wizards, keep all your options open. If there's a team that wants Trae Young, he's in the last year of his deal, and you've drafted Darren Peterson, maybe you make that trade. You don't want to have to deal with a long-term extension right now when this team is young and growing together. Anthony Davis doesn't want to be in D.C.? What if one of those teams I just mentioned, the Celtics or the Nuggets or the Timberwolves or the Magic or whoever, say, yeah, we'll take 50 games of healthy Anthony Davis? You make that trade if you're the Wizards. I think this is going to be a wild NBA offseason. The draft is just going to be a part of it. All right, we'll talk to Jordan DeJani next. Nick Ashew on The Fan.